joining us tonight on After Dark with Rob and Andrew here on America Out Loud Talk Radio. It's been an action-packed year on America Out Loud, which is available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or Pandora. And don't miss anything over at AmericaOutLoud.com, which is loaded with articles and countless hours of podcast. We're fired up for tonight's show because our special guest, Mark McCloskey, will be joining us for an in-depth discussion. Of course, everyone remembers the summer of 2020 when Mark and his wife were invaded by an angry Black Lives Matter mob outside of their own home. Since then, they have tried to take away his guns and smear him in the media. Mark has not been deterred and become a symbol of fighting back against the mob. He spoke at the Republican National Convention, and now he is even running for Senate in the great state of Missouri. I am excited, Rob. How about you?
Andrew, I'm fired up to have Mark on. I've been reaching out to him for quite some time. And when I saw an email from someone in his camp saying, contact me here and I can arrange it, I was more than excited because it's true patriots like Mark that's standing up against the woke media, the woke crowd, BLM, Antifa. Those are the people that are going to save our great country. And we need patriots like him on the Hill, people who are ready and willing to fight. And I know that he's ready and willing to fight because if you take a look at his page running for Senate, the proof is in the picture. Say no more. He is ready to get the job done, just like all of the other candidates that we've had on the show. One in particular, Laverne Spicer, who's fired up in Florida, and she's ready to get the job done. Look at Marjorie Taylor Greene. A lot of people don't like her. Okay, fine. But she loves the country and she's willing to go the limits. She's standing up and she's calling out the rhinos. And that's what we need to happen. People to call them out. Yes, they're in our party, but they don't mean us any good. Look at Elizabeth Cheney, Adam Kinzinger. They're working for Nancy Pelosi. They should just go in and just say, we're going to switch parties. Go ahead and give them what they need. Give them the headcount because that's what you're doing. You can't tell me that you are a conservative or Republican and you're fighting against the party. Why would you even engage her? Why would you even agree to be on some commission that's basically a witch hunt like we had with the Russia collusion? Now we need to investigate January 6th. I can tell you what we need to ask. Who shot Ashley Babbitt? Who, what, when, where, and how? An armed white woman. What did the FBI know and when did they know it? Why was the FBI involved in January 6th? Why were they instigators? Because we all saw that there were people that were there ushered into the White House, or not the White House, but the Capitol, and they were told, don't mess with that and don't do this. Now, there were some patriots, if I can call them patriots, I think they were insiders, I think it was a hit job, who decided to act out like the shaman, a professional actor. And as one of our guests came on the show and said to us, he knows for a fact that some of the people that were within the crowd were infiltrated by the FBI. Christopher Wray, what do you know and when did you know it? Muriel Bowser, what did you know and when did you know it? More in particular, Nancy Pelosi, what did you know, when did you know it, and what did you not do? It was your responsibility to protect the Hill that falls in your purview. Muriel Bowser, you're supposed to protect DC, but instead you're out putting up murals on the streets saying Black Lives Matter. I know that my Black Lives Matter. I don't need anyone to put it on the streets to reassure me. However, that being said, maybe the east side of St. Louis, they need to know that. They need to have it in the streets. And Chicago South Side, they need to have it on the streets so that when they go out on the weekends and start gang banging and killing other Black people, they will stop and see the sign on the streets that says Black Lives Matter. We don't need white liberals, elitists, or bougie Blacks to tell us that our lives matter. This has to stop. It has to end. And as for the prosecutor in Missouri, Kimberly Gardner, she should be ashamed of herself. She's nothing but an agent of George Soros and so many other prosecutors that are in these different states and liberal states and cities, if I might add. Democrats control. You look around you. You look at the crime that's blowing up. Where is it taking place? In cities that are run by Democrats. not Republicans, not conservatives, because we believe in law and order. How did we get here? What happened? Don't tell me about racism, because it has nothing to do with racism, especially when you see people at the border that are coming to America, breaching our borders, because they want part of the American dream. They don't want some of that racism that we're going to give them. Do you actually think they're coming here for racism? They're laughing at us. Racism does exist, but America has done a damn good job in trying to eradicate it. So Secretary of State Mark Blinken, that little ploy that you pulled, inviting the United Nations, a body that does not like America, to come in and investigate to see if we're racist, we know what they're going to say. Yes, we are. But then I would ask them still, why are people coming to America? Why are they breaching our walls? Just to try out some of that racism, just to make certain that it's work, to make certain that it is what they say it is? Surely that's not the case. But yet and still, here we are. Our guest tonight, Mark Mikulski, we're glad to have him on. And we want him to tell our audience why he's running for the Senate, what change he's going to make, and how does he see our country? Mark, thank you for coming on tonight. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me on. I've been a lifelong Republican. We've been big supporters of a variety of Republican candidates statewide, nationwide, as well since before I was old enough to vote, actually. For example, Oliver North and I have been friends for over 30 years back in the Iran-Contra days when he was being railroaded by the government. We put on fundraisers at our house for his criminal defense. And back when he was thinking about running for Senate in Virginia, we were big supporters of his and put on more fundraisers for him then. But I've never had any interest in actually entering politics or being a candidate. And if you'd asked me a year and a month ago what I wanted most in the world, I'd say it was for the world to leave me the heck alone and let me live out the rest of my life in peace and comfort. But, you know, the world chose differently. As I said, when I announced my candidacy, God came knocking on my door disguised as an angry mob. And that was last June 28th. And I won't go into that in too great a detail other than to say that, we weren't going to let it happen here. We were not going to let what we'd seen around the country take place at my house. And St. Louis is, just for those of you that live in the civilized world, you can't imagine how dangerous St. Louis is. Last fall, Mayor Rudy Giuliani and Bernie Carrick, the former police commissioner in New York, came down here and spent a couple of days with us. And we did some Fox shows together and Rudy's podcast. And we were comparing notes on how dangerous cities are. New York City has 8,400,000 residents. And at that time, they'd had about 300 murders. City of St. Louis, under 300,000 people, we'd had 258 murders at the same time. Almost 20 times the murder rate in St. Louis as New York City, and they were having a bad year. And then you have to add on top of that the George Floyd effect. And those people that claim to have the moral high ground, those people who claim to be in favor of diversity and inclusion, decided the best way to show us how to love one another was by burning down downtown St. Louis and looting and murdering. And on that night of June the 1st and June the 2nd of last year, they tore up downtown, they set fires, they shot four police officers, killed retired police captain David Dorn. And one of the most impressive things we saw was the 7-Eleven in downtown St. Louis, two blocks from police headquarters. From the time the first rock went through a window and the mob came in and looted it empty and then set fire to it and fire engulfed the building and the roof came in. And my wife and I are watching this from a live helicopter feed, 10, 20, 30, 40 minutes. No police showed up. No fire department showed up. We looked at each other and said, boy, when the fit hits the shan, you're out there and you're wild lonesome. And so, and then in the ensuing weeks, more and more of the businesses in our neighborhood got boarded up. A truck drove right through the front of the office depot by my office, which is about three blocks further into the city from my house. And one of the advantages for criminals of living in a city that's been controlled by Democrats for 78 years is there is no fear of reprisal for crime. And so if you're going to have a mob action, you can actually advertise it ahead of time. And these folks who are in control of this Antifa organization in St. Louis called Expect Us, St. Louis, headed by Cori Bush and Rasheen Aldred, put out a flyer saying they're going to have a mob action in my neighborhood on Friday, June 28th. And so because those folks like to burn things and there's stuff in our house, and including us, that we didn't want to have burned, we got a bunch of fire extinguishers and set them around the first floor of the house. Because they like to shoot people and we didn't particularly like to get shot, we put some guns around the first floor of the house. And that Friday came and went, nothing happened. And we thought, wow, we dodged that bullet. But then Sunday came. And our daughter, who's 30, was coming in from Chicago to have dinner with us. And we start setting up dinner on the porch. And all of a sudden, the mob starts coming down the street. The police had closed off Kings Highway, the six-lane wide road outside my private neighborhood, closed off Kings Highway to let the mob use it, but then did not post any police officers anywhere in the neighborhoods. In fact, they'd been ordered to stand down. So the mob hits our gate, 300 to 500 of them, chanting all the typical BS, you know, whose streets, our streets, no justice, no peace, no racist police, and my favorite one, which was, you can't stop the revolution. And as the street fills from wall to wall and as far south as we could see with this mob, all of a sudden the gate smashes open, half of it gets popped open, the other half folds down to the ground, and people start pouring in. I stood out on the wing of the porch and said the two most white supremacist, racist words known in the English language. I said, private property. And, you know, being communist, that pissed them off. And they started running in faster and faster and faster. And my wife and daughter went into the house to call 911. And I ran in the house and grabbed my AR-15, stood out front, back out on the porch, saying things to them, really, you know, obnoxious things like, private property, get out. I probably swore at him once, get the hell out of my neighborhood. And then all of a sudden, Patty shows up in the front lawn between me and the mob. And now I've got a problem because I don't have a clean line of fire. And, you know, we've been married for 35 years at that point and didn't really want to accidentally put a bullet in her. So now I have to go down into the mob myself. You know, we didn't put off a shot. Nobody got hurt. 132-year-old gate got destroyed and our psyche got a little bruised. But that's the value of the Second Amendment, just being able to hold the mob at bay. And that's the first of the two events. Actually the easier of the two, because we got a tip from a client of ours that was inside the mob, that was a brainwashed member of that Antifa organization. They called in on Tuesday and said that what you guys did was inexcusable and you're going to have to die. That we're coming back on Friday, and that would be July the 3rd, and we're going to kill you and burn down the house, and there's nothing you can do about it. And this wasn't just an offhand comment. This client who we'd known for years, kept Patty on the phone for an hour and a half, just going up one side and down the other. And there was nothing we could do, and we were going to die, and they were going to do it. You know, so we started trying to get secondary employment cops that we hire from time to time. None of the local cops wanted to do the job for fear of getting bad press. We had been referred to this place down in Farmington, Missouri, that does high-tech security around the planet. And they'd gotten some bad press on the Ferguson riots, and they refused to do it. So I said to the owner, what the heck am I supposed to do? And he said, well, I would just take anything I can't live without, put it in the vehicles, and abandon the house. Well, I said, there's no effing way in heck we're going to do that. We'll go down with a ship if we have to, but we're not abandoning the house. And so, you know, earlier in the week, I'd gotten a call from the White House. The gentleman at the White House said the president wanted to express his support. And if there's ever anything he could do for us, let him know. I called that guy back up and I said, well, now's a pretty stinking good opportunity, right? And so he gave me Mark Meadows' cell phone number, and I got a hold of Mark Meadows and told him the longer version of this story, and he got to work on it. Then I called up Tucker Carlson, and Tucker's talking to me, and he hears Patty crying in the background and says, you know, puts us on the air and says, you know, I'm talking to Mark McCloskey. I can hear Mrs. McCloskey sobbing in the background. The mob's coming back to kill him on Friday, and there's nothing they can do, and the local police have been ordered to stand down, and the state's not going to offer him any aid, and put out a call to arms. And we really thought that was the end. We had no reason to believe any of this would actually help. And our daughter went down the basement that Thursday night, got her favorite stuffed animal when she was a little girl, came up, gave us each a hug and a kiss, and said goodbye, expecting to never see us alive again. But, you know, when that Friday came, we still spent, you know, that night was a harrowing night because we thought it'd be our last night. But when that Friday came, the miracle started to happen. An ex-Navy SEAL who's a fourth-generation cattle farmer from Kansas just threw his gear in the back of his pickup, drove straight through. The mob was supposed to hit the gate at about 7 o'clock. He got here at about 6:30. By the time the mob hit the gate, we had six ex-Navy SEALs. We had about 10 secondary employment police officers from rural jurisdictions that weren't afraid to get a little dirty if the job required it. We had the FBI light aircraft circling the house. We had what we used to call peace through superior firepower. And once again, we held off the mob. I assembled our security team up in the second floor of the house before the mob hit. And I said, what happens here tonight will determine the fate of the country. Because if the media wakes up tomorrow morning with a whole bunch of dead bodies around the house, the world will change. And we can't let that happen. What we need to do is do this smart, protect the house, show a show of force, but nobody gets hurt and nothing dramatic happens and we don't give the left any ammunition. And that's what happened. We held off the mob. We got an all clear about 4:30 in the morning. But you know, standing out in front of our house on the other side of the now heavily reinforced gate was a young lady named Cori Bush chanting into a microphone, "You can't stop the revolution. You can't stop the revolution." Well, my personal security, who is a SEAL named Jim, leaning his hands on the butt of his rifle, says, "Oh, yes, I can." But that young lady's Cori Bush, and she's now in the United States Congress. She's a representative for the 1st District of Missouri, and that hypocrite had the gall to stand up in Congress and say, no one who supports insurrection should be allowed to walk the halls of Congress, with reference to our Senator Josh Hawley. And yet she's the only person in Congress who expressly and to me has advocated the violent overthrow of this country. Now that's all background, because that's the question was, why did I decide to run for U.S. Senate? That July 3rd was the day the president gave his Mount Rushmore address. And we were a little busy trying to stay alive that night, so we didn't get a chance to listen to it. But I listened to it the next morning. And President Trump talked about defeating Marxist extremists in the United States. And then I listened to the mass media reply, and they called that the most divisive speech a president could give. And we looked at each other and said, if defeating Marxism in the United States is divisive, if we're supposed to like live in harmony with the people that wish to destroy us and destroy our lifestyle and destroy our private property and take all our rights away and eventually kill us, if that's what the media thinks we should do, there's something dramatically wrong with this country. And we just made a vow that then and there to just put our lives on hold and do whatever we had to for the rest of our lives to try to pull back our freedoms and save this country. And so we went to work for the Trump campaign. And we went down and stayed with Colonel Allen West down in Dallas and did campaign events down there with him. We did two tours for the president and surrogates up in Pennsylvania on the Team Trump bus, did a second tour through Texas, did Oklahoma, Missouri, Kansas, and spent the entire campaign working for the Trump campaign. And I got to tell you, we did 7 rallies a day as surrogates for the president. And between each rally, we'd stop at contributors' offices and supportive restaurants and things like that. So maybe 12, 13, 14 times a day, we'd get off the bus and go out there and give presentations and meet folks out there in the real world. And we found two things. That everybody out there is just sick and tired of the status quo. Everybody was sick and tired of this constant progression to the left, constant erosion of our civil liberties, constant erosion of our rights. And that everybody, including the Republicans, just talked and nothing substantive ever happened. And they were sick of cancel culture and the poison of critical race theory and the lie of systemic racism and the threat of mob violence like the brown shirts in support of the Nazis. And they wanted really substantive change. The other thing we found was that every place we stopped, we'd talk to the folks, and just about every single time we'd find a story of a personal miracle where the Lord had come to people and made a material difference in their lives. Folks that were having a hard time making their miracle happen, and they would get a bit of inspiration, a little touch of grace, and turn their lives around. And Patty and I realized that that's what had happened to us, that this event had caused us to become different, that we had had a new life presented to us and an opportunity to serve and to give back, which we would not have otherwise had, and a calling that was beyond us, which was something that we were obligated to do. And that's really what eventually crystallized in the decision to run for Senate. Because once the campaign was over and things at least technically didn't work out the way we liked, we just kept doing the same thing we'd been doing for the president. We started talking in the rotunda of the state capitol on our God-given rights and on the Constitution and our constitutional rights. And people liked what I had to say. And so I started getting invited to Lincoln Days and speaking and doing the same kind of presentation. And then when Roy Blunt announced that he didn't want to run, we started getting calls and people asked me if I wanted to run for Senate.
You know, Mark, that's a powerful story. Just listening to you say it, we lived it by watching it on TV, but to hear it actually come from your mouth, it's a harrowing story that someone would literally call you and tell you that you're going to die. We're going to burn down the house. Now, we heard them. We heard the news say that this was said to you and your wife. But to hear it from you and to know that the police and no one in authority was going to do anything about it, the liberal media thought that it was okay. Cori Bush was elected to Congress. And there she stands on the floor of the House with her evil rhetoric coming from her lips. A Black woman who should know that this is wrong, who knows what her ancestors went through, but yet and still, she now wants to cause hatefulness towards someone else. It's unimaginable to think that in 2021, this is where we are in America. In my opinion, this is all the fault of Barack Obama, the first Black president who failed both terms, who had two Black attorney generals. And when he saw that Blacks were turning on him, he decided to play the race card and threw everything into a tailspin.
The world we live in today is so totally upside down. You have Lori Lightfoot again announcing that she won't allow anybody except people of color to interview her. We've got Cori Bush who says that it's time for African Americans, take over and punish white people for all our sins. We've got the circuit attorney in the city of St. Louis whose level of incompetence is so great that you have to suspect that it's not incompetence. It's a concerted effort to undermine the judicial system and undermine the safety of the community. You've got the president of the United States saying that he can decide what is information and what is misinformation and censor anything that he doesn't think we should be allowed to hear or say. This is not a free country anymore. This is not the country that I grew up in. And how you can have a country, by the way, I was the first lawyer in the country to file a lawsuit against a school for critical race theory. And this whole BS that, and nobody even pretends, anybody who reads the literature doesn't pretend to say anything different, that this is just, curing racism by racism, dividing us all in little tiny subgroups, instead of having everybody pull in the same direction, have everybody fight against each other. On the great seal of the state of Missouri, it says, united we stand, divided we fall. And this process, and you're right, starting with Barack Obama, has been to divide us, put us at each other's throats, not work all together for the common good, but to try to divide us all to destroy the common good. And why? Because out of chaos comes tyranny, and tyranny is what they want.
Exactly. That's exactly what they want. They want chaos. They want tyranny. And then this prosecutor, Kimberly Gardner, as I said in my opening, how she became the prosecutor thanks to George Soros. And when you look around the country, you see people like George Soros supporting these radical prosecutors, these radical individuals in law enforcement, these same individuals that are letting these criminals out on the streets, they have private security to protect them. The irony of it.
Cori Bush spending $70,000 to protect herself while calling not just for the defunding, but the abolition of the police department and defunding of the Pentagon.
Defund the police, but with their private security. Andrew, we've talked about this before, and it's ridiculous.
And then the worst thing is, you know, with Kimberly Gardner, with the current debacle here in the city of St. Louis, where they appoint an assistant prosecutor to handle these murder cases, including I represent the family of one of the murder victims I've had for a long time. And this young man was murdered in cold blood. The murderer is seen on video going to his car, getting out his pistol and shooting my client's son in the back of his head. And then a prosecutor is assigned to the case. She went on maternity leave on May the 10th. On May 17th, Kim Gardner's office appoints her to be the prosecutor of this murder case. Of course, she's not there. Everybody knows she's not there. The state's attorney's office, the prosecuting office, doesn't produce the discovery, the evidence it has against the murderer. They go in, they ask the court to issue an order to compel the circuit attorney's office to produce the evidence. Judge issues the order. Circuit attorney's office doesn't do it. They get another order. The court says, come in on this day and show cause why the state shouldn't be held in contempt for failure to obey my last order. And because the judge knew that this prosecutor wasn't even there because she was out on maternity leave, had the order to show cause personally delivered to Kim Gardner's office saying, show up on this date and give me good reason why I shouldn't hold the circuit attorney's office in contempt for failing to follow my last order. And they didn't show up for that. And they had no choice but to cut this cold-blooded murderer free. And Kim Gardner's office then issues a statement saying, oops, this is just a mistake of our internal policy regarding family leave, but no harm, no foul, because we still got him in custody. Except that wasn't true. He'd already been released. The last time he got released, they had to chase him down to Texas to arrest him. But I understand, thank God, that he got arrested. Despite all of her incompetence, the police were still able to do their job.
It was a height of incompetence. And when I heard that story, I had to give a second look. I'm like, am I hearing this correctly? That the person, the judge, had to let the person go because of Kimberly's incompetence. She goes after law-abiding citizens like yourself and your wife. But when there is a person who has committed a crime against the Black community, she looks the other way. And as I said before, who suffers? The Black communities. The communities that they're saying that they're trying to protect. The communities that they're saying systemic racism is against. They are the guilty parties. People like Kimberly Gardner and the Black mayors like Lori Lightfoot, who claim Black Lives Matter, but they're looking the other way.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. This young Black man who was shot in the back of his head, his life didn't matter too much to Kimberly Gardner or the other. You know, we had 262 murders in this little tiny city of St. Louis last year. The vast majority of those were African-American men. Apparently, those Black lives don't matter at all. So the hypocrisy is just unfathomable. But Kim Gardner ran on a program not of enhancing public safety or administering law enforcement, but to engineer social change. And they don't care how many people have to die and how many young Black men have to get shot in order to engineer that social change.
Yeah, the double standards and hypocrisy are stunning. And you guys are listening to After Dark on America Out Loud Talk Radio, available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, or download the America Out Loud app. We will be back with more from our guest, Mark McLeod.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
While the cancel culture is determined to destroy our history, bringing violence and terror to city streets, America Out Loud will enhance its own message of love and honor for the American traditions and constitutional values that have always been the backbone of what America means: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
And we're back, After Dark with Rob and Andrew, and our guest today is Mark Makowski, who's running for Senate in Missouri. And during our first segment, Mark was walking us through or revisiting what happened in 2020. And I don't know if you are familiar with the story, but I would encourage you that when the podcast comes out, to listen to his story again. Because it's one thing to read about it in the papers or read about it online, or to have the liberal media to try and narrate it without giving it the truth, because they like to massage the information to make themselves or the culprits look good. And as we saw on TV, the live shots, the videos, Makowski and his wife were doing absolutely nothing but protecting their rights, protecting their property. They have every right to do that. When you have a mad crowd, out of control mob that's threatening you and calling you, harassing you, and telling you that they are going to kill you and going to burn it down, what recourse do you have? Somehow along the way, someone slipped. Someone wasn't looking. And this hateful rhetoric was able to raise its ugly head and to start to spread like a cancer. And if we don't stop it, if we don't cut it off, if we don't have more people like Mark Makowski standing up and willing to throw their hats into the ring, knowing that they will be accosted, they will be attacked, their lives threatened, their families threatened. If we don't have people like him willing to go the extra mile and to sacrifice all for the love of country, our country is doomed. Andrew, what do you say?
Yeah, I could not agree more. We badly need some new politicians in Washington, D.C., and it sounds like Mark McCloskey would be a great America First person in that Senate seat. I'm very interested for his plans for Senate in the great state of Missouri. Senator Hawley is doing a good job, but Roy Blunt is retiring. Mark, who are you running against, and when is the election?
Well, the primary election is a year from this August, and I'm running against, amongst other people, former Governor Eric Greitens, the current Attorney General Eric Schmidt, and so far the only other declared candidate is Vicki Hartzler, who is the 4th District Congresswoman from out in the north central part of the state. Fairly formidable opponents. I guess the best thing I can say is that, there are tarnished candidates and there are career politicians. And if any of these folks were really going to go and shake up things in D.C., really going to go and absolutely represent the people of this state and do so in a way that makes a difference, that reflects a true conservative constitutionalist, we would have already seen it. And so, I can tell you that I have been a staunch conservative and a vocal anti-communist my entire life. I was giving lectures in college back in the late 70s and 80s. Those were the days of the Iran-Contra issue and the Sandinista government of Nicaragua, and also against the Robert Mugabe government in what used to be Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe. And it was been my lifetime obsession, I guess you'd say, of recognizing the forces of the left and doing what I could to counteract them. But I never thought about doing it politically, other than just speaking personally and speaking in small groups or speaking at college functions. And then I started practicing law. Shoot, I've been practicing law since 1985. And, working to protect the rights of ordinary citizens during that period of time. And so it's been, like I said, if you'd asked me what I wanted most in the world a year and a month ago, I would have said for the world, leave me the heck alone. But the world chose differently.
Mark, when did you notice a big change in your area, St. Louis? It has such potential to be such a beautiful city. You've got the Arch, you've got the St. Louis Zoo down by Busch Stadium, a really nice looking area. When did you notice the big change in St. Louis since you've been there for such a long time? And what is it about Missouri? You told us in the first half that the mob tried chasing you out of your home in St. Louis. They tried telling you to leave the state, even somebody told you to do, but you refused. What is it about St. Louis and Missouri that have always loved so much?
The problem in St. Louis is that we've had a single party rule for my entire life. And the left has always controlled and the Democrats have always controlled the city of St. Louis. You know, on a slightly different topic, on the topic of institutionalized racism and white privilege, we live in a city that's about 50-50 black and white. And yet we have a black mayor, a black president of the Board of Aldermen, black chief of police, black prosecutor. And so I'm kind of hard for me to figure how these folks can legitimately claim that they're held back by racism. But, you know, that's just one man's aside. But the problem is that I think that the governments in St. Louis throughout my lifetime have kind of viewed politics as a way to extract tax dollars and distribute them to your friends. And that the city has decayed more and more and more. And despite that, the residents of St. Louis continue to vote for Democrats. In this last election cycle, they elected Cori Bush to Congress. They reelected Kim Gardner as a circuit attorney. How they can be duped into doing that year after year after year when they see the city crumbling around them and their lives are made progressively worse and poverty growing ever larger and larger and larger through the city, and yet they keep electing the same kind of government. I just don't understand it, but I'm hoping to offer them an alternative.
And that's what I don't understand either. You look around you, and these individuals see that the cities are crumbling down. You look into black communities. I'm black, and I look and I see it. My voice is silenced because the liberal media and the other bougie blacks don't want what I'm saying to be put out there. I'm not going to have any excuses. As I said, racism does exist. But when we're able to elect a black person as president, not one term, but two terms, where is the racism? Or did he cheat to be elected? When we look around us and we see black individuals, and I don't say African Americans because I don't identify as an African American, I'm a black American. I'm an American first. Okay. But when I look around me and I see black millionaires, billionaires, blacks able to participate in the middle class. Are things perfect? No, but I'm sure there could be some white people that would say the same thing. Every white person isn't rich. Every Chinese isn't rich. Every Indian isn't rich. But we have the opportunity to get there. And if there are blacks that feel as if though they've been hindered or stopped, and it does exist, I do see it. You know why? It's because of the white liberals that has stopped it. The white liberals that control the media. They control a lot of the jobs. Look at the big tech jobs. Let's just investigate Amazon and Facebook. How many blacks do you see are there? Why aren't they going out trying to hire more blacks or encourage them? But yet they want to stand back and say, the country is bad because you're not doing X, Y, Z. We have got to stop that. It is too divisive. And while Barack Obama is sitting in his mansion on Martha's Vineyard telling the rest of the world that we need to take care of the environment, it's like, what are you doing? Why aren't you in Chicago speaking out about the violence? Putting a sign up saying Black Lives Matter is meaningless when you have a two-year-old who has been shot, when you have children who wake up knowing or saying to themselves, I could be dead tonight. The same stories that we're hearing now, I heard back in the 90s and the 80s. Why is it when you have black people as politicians at the top of the pecking order and things have not changed in those communities? Mayor Lori Lightfoot, a black woman, as the mayor of Chicago, why haven't things changed?
Well, you know, part of the reason is that if you're a black politician and you're not a liberal, you get destroyed, or at least they attempt to. We went down, we're staying at Colonel Allen Westhouse in Dallas right after he became chairman of the Republican Party of Texas. And the first day we were there, the media was calling him a racist. By the second day we were there, he became a white supremacist. That was my favorite, right? Just because he happens to be successful and black and conservative, now he becomes a white supremacist. The liberals can't tolerate anybody of color who is successful and not a liberal, because it's counter-narrative. And so they have to try to destroy those folks. And it's just, you know, fanning the flames of racism is eventually going to, I hope, lose its luster, because everything, every word, every person can't be racist. But it's certainly what the liberals are trying to sell us.
All right. They're definitely trying to sell us that everything out there, if it doesn't work right, it's because of racism. And as I said in the opening, if that is the case, why is it that you have people at the border that are trying to come across of every nationality?
Yeah.
Is it that they want to taste some of this racism that we have? It's like, I'm coming across. And I say this on every show, and I know that it sounds funny, but when you think about it, why is it that people are coming across the border illegally, knowing, as the left said, the country is a racist country? And not only that, when you look at other countries, look at Cuba, look at what they're going through. Of course, the media, mainstream media, they're trying not to report on it. Because when you see the images of the Cubans out in the streets carrying the American flag saying, help us, support us, why wouldn't we want to help the Cubans? Yeah. Well, we're afraid that if they come here, they could vote conservatives. Because a lot of Latinos that have come on our show, Mark, have told Andrew and I that the values of conservatism are in line with that of the Hispanic community. And not only that, Mark, but those same values are within the Black community. If they would only turn away from the Democrats, who are doing nothing but holding them back. And as I always say, and I said this on Twitter, and I was censored, they kicked me off for some other reason, but I've always said this, if the Democrats would get their knee off the necks of Black people would be able to prosper, but they will not do it. They're looking for the proverbial boogie white man. They're saying that his knee is on the neck of the Black people. No, it is the Democrat Party. Barack Obama knows it. Al Sharpton knows it, as well as a lot of the other elitist Blacks. They know it. They need to remove the knee off the neck of the Black man so that he can prosper within his community. Now, another topic that I want to discuss is the COVID-19 and the push to get people to take the vaccine. As we have said on this show, COVID-19, also known as the China virus, as I'm always correcting people with, it does exist. The vaccine has its purpose, but to become a socialist country and try to force people to take it, it's just wrong. What do you say, Mark?
Well, two things. First of all, if the vaccine works, then why should we wear masks? If the vaccine doesn't work, why should we take it? But the most important aspect of this is what you just said. Why in the world would the government spend so much time and billions of dollars trying to coerce people into taking this experimental drug, which nobody knows what the long-term result of it will be? And why are they trying to get everybody to get vaccinated as fast as humanly possible, and at the same time telling us that even if you get vaccinated, we're not going to lift the stranglehold off you. We're not going to let you exist like you did before. The only reason is to express the power of the government to make us behave. I call the COVID-19 lockdowns of a year ago last spring the final exam on American freedom. I have said this ever since then, that, you know, I figured that in the past that FEMA would create some kind of faux crisis and tell us all that we had to be under house arrest, that we couldn't leave our homes, that we couldn't go to our businesses, that we couldn't go to church, and we couldn't go to school, and we all had to just stay home, even if it meant that our livelihoods went away and our business failed and our lives were destroyed and we became depressed and committed suicide and everything else. But I figured that in order to get us to do it, they have to hold a gun to our head. And then a year ago last spring, the government just said, do that, stay home, don't go to work, don't go to school, don't go to church, don't even go and see your own parents dying in the hospital. You're not even allowed to go see your own children being born in the hospital. And everybody just did it. Everybody complied. Even in the completely pacified and sheepish population of New Zealand, they've got protests in the street this week, but not in the United States. So I call that the final exam on American freedom, and we all failed. Almost everybody just complied. And even now, Lord God Fauci changes his position from day to day. People follow what he says. I don't remember voting for Lord God Fauci. I don't remember having him be appointed our ultimate dictator. And yet he has done more to destroy this country in a year and a half than any elected official has in the history of this nation. And people are, you know, they've issued mask mandates again in the city of St. Louis and in St. Louis County. And I was out today and people are putting their masks back on. Like all of a sudden, the virus that wouldn't affect them yesterday will kill them today if they don't wear their masks. And, you know, it's just shocking how mind controlled we have become, where we will do whatever the government asks, no matter how obviously ridiculous it is. Like, for example, going into a restaurant. You have to put your mask on when you go into a restaurant because that virus won't recognize you when you've got a mask on and won't be able to follow you to the table. Because when you get to the table, you can take your mask off and the virus won't know you're there because it didn't know who you were when you came in. Until 10 o'clock at night, when all of a sudden the virus will recognize you and get you ill.
It's hilarious. I look back on last year, because as you said, you're more nice to Dr. Fauci than I am. I call him Dr. Fraud. How this man was put out there, and originally people thought, you know, he had good intentions, but when he kept changing his modeling, he and Dr. Burks, and I started listening to Dr. Atlas, and there was another doctor on Fox News, and they were saying, wait a minute, we need to take a step back. But one of the things that I always question is that, wait, this is one doctor, what about getting a second opinion? And whenever you wanted to get that, the left-wing media would shut you down, along with big tech, because they did not want us to listen to anyone else. And what happened as a result? Our freedoms, civil liberties, were siphoned from us. We were told to stay inside. People were afraid to go outside. They would look out their windows, and they would even tell on their neighbors if they saw their neighbors having more than five people in their own home. I mean, can you believe it? You're looking out your window, and if your neighbor has, the minimum is three. If they have three and a half, as though you can have that, but have four people, I'm going to call the police. I'm going to call them and tell them that they have more people. It's like, that's none of your business. And that's the way I view the vaccine right now. If I want to take it, that's my business. If I don't want to take it, and if I get sick, that's on me. What do you guys care? We were told, put your mask on and we'll stop the spread. And then we were told, well, the mask doesn't do anything. I never felt that the mask was doing anything anyway, but be that as it may. Okay, put the mask on. Now put on two masks. Then it was stay inside, stay away from people. Only these people can get it. Underlying conditions. I still think that that is the case. If you have an underlying condition, you should definitely take extra care. But then it moved to, okay, young adults. They could get it also because they saw young adults partying at South Beach. They didn't like that. But all the while, the rioters of the spring of 2020, they were allowed to go out, destroy, kill, burn up property, burn up state property, federal property, tear up homes, tear up business districts, take over small parts of downtowns and different cities. And they were told, hey, this is for the cause. And who even said, as Chris Cuomo, who said that protesting had to be peaceful? Well, it says so in the Constitution, you knucklehead. Well, hey, he was saying that because his brother was getting him treatments. His brother was making certain that he was tested while other people were dying. And if this virus is so deadly, and if it discriminates to the point that more people of color are dying and are getting it, why is it, will they not release the numbers of the 15,000 people in New York who have died from the virus, and in Michigan and in Pennsylvania? Why won't they release those numbers so that we can say, you guys killed Black people? They won't let that out. So again, 2020, civil liberties were taken away. We were told to stay inside. And then when we decided to go outside, there are things that we can't do or that you shouldn't do. And now they're looking at a super spreader and they're saying, oh, we might have to shut down the economy again. We might have to force you to put on your mask. But people aren't thinking. They're just walking around like little sheeple saying, okay, I acquiesce. I'll give up all my freedoms. And for what? Do you want to leave a country behind that is controlled by socialism? I mean, Mark, I can't fathom that people are so willing to do it.
The problem with human beings generally is that we are a herd animal at heart. We want to be led. And Orwell said it very, very clearly that the goal of totalitarian government is to get us to believe mutually exclusive facts without recognizing the difference. And so, for example, get vaccinated, but keep wearing your mask. I mean, that's as ridiculous a concept as you can possibly come up with. But so many things in the world today. Well, an example I give often when I'm making presentations is I'm 64 and a half years old. If I go to an airport, most places, and order a drink, I have to show a driver's license to prove I'm over 21. Now, everybody knows that's ridiculous. Everybody knows that you can look at me and know that I'm old enough to buy a drink. But the government wants you to do things which are objectively unreasonable and ridiculous because it's their way of teaching you to behave. And when you divorce reason from rule, you can impose any rule that you want. And that's the whole point. They want people not to think, does this make sense? But merely to say, this is what the government says, and therefore I must do it. And that's where we are today. I mean, it's just shocking the way people have just chosen to ignore their liberties, and the way the courts have decided that the Constitution is waivable under certain circumstances. We have a Constitution that says, thou shalt not, you know, Congress shall make no law. And yet the courts have actually said that in times of emergency, not so much so, we can do what we want. You know, I'll go on this topic, but with regard to election integrity, the Constitution says that the elections are up to the state legislators, and we have states where non-legislative rules were made, which resulted in what most of us believe to be a fixed election result, and the courts are refusing to take a look at it. It's mind-boggling for me. Yeah, Chuck Schumer standing on the steps of the Supreme Court, actually threatening the Supreme Court justices Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, saying that if they don't rule the way he wants, they will have to pay the price. I mean, here you got the majority leader of the United States Senate physically threatening the Supreme Court. Does he go to jail? You know, a peaceful protester in D.C. got 8 years in prison for trespass this week. Chuck Schumer gets to threaten the Supreme Court, and he's walking around free.
Right. No one says anything about him threatening the Supreme Court justices. It's like, oh, that's just business as usual. That's what's supposed to happen. And as we've said many times on here on our show, After Dark with Rob and Andrew, you look at January 6th, and they're saying, oh, that was so horrible. But then I refer back to the spring and summer of 2020, when people were actually trying to destroy the government and take down law and order. And when you look at when Kavanaugh was about to be voted on for the Supreme Court, when you had women organizations go inside the Senate halls and camp out on the floor so that they couldn't go and vote. And what did we hear? This is what democracy looks like. Are you serious? They're obstructing a procedure of the Senate. But yet and still, we will say January 6th was an insurrection. Now, speaking along those same lines, Mark, what are your thoughts on President Biden? Clearly, he is not altogether there. And I don't know why people take offense, people being the left, when we say that he's senile. But for Joe Biden, the first thing they'll say is, well, he stutters. To me, that's an insult to individuals with speech impediment problems. He's forgetful. He's senile, and it's elder abuse. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's apparent that frequently he doesn't know where he is. And there are times when I remember one scene where he was in a hardware store. He was doing some kind of a photo op in a hardware store, and nobody had prepared him for what would happen when his cue card ran out, and he just stood there with this frightened, lost look on his face, waiting for some handler to show him which way to go. And that's the person who's supposed to be the leader of the free world. His saving grace is that the second in line is so frightening to the population that they'd rather hang on to the sleepy Uncle Joe than have to subject the world to Kamala Harris.
Absolutely. And that's what it is. But I find it embarrassing that this guy is rolled out and he's reading from cue cards. Every time he goes before a world leader, he has his cue cards, and there's no shame to it. Yeah. And he will say, well, they told me to read this. They told me this. They told me that. It's like, you're the leader of the free world. You could do and say whatever you want to do and say.
You know, my favorite one is when he keeps saying, well, I'd answer some questions, but they won't let me, or they've told me not to. Well, who is it that's running the country then? Obviously, somebody other than Joe Biden is, in fact, running the country. Somebody asked me that the other day, and I said, well, you know, the way the world works, the people that actually control the world are people you've never heard of. If you know their name, they're not really in charge.
Well, I would say this. If those two are our representatives, we're in a lot of trouble because she had her hands in getting out a lot of rioters during the spring and summer of 2020. And I think about it and I look at it and I'm like, folks, are you sure that these are the people that we elected?
And you got to think about this. You got not only Kamala Harris setting up a fund to bail rioters out so they get out the next day and riot again. You got Maxine Waters standing out in front of the Minneapolis courthouse after a year of destruction and billions of dollars in damage and dozens of people murdered and buildings and cities under siege, standing out in front of the Minneapolis courthouse saying, we have to be even more confrontational. What? Not enough buildings burned? Not enough people were killed? We have to be even more confrontational? You've got the president of the United States talking about, in the Derek Chauvin case, the right verdict, not the verdict required by the evidence or not the verdict required by law, but the verdict that he wants for his political narrative. Reverend Al Sharpton, the anti-Semite who has advocated the murder of white police officers, standing on the lawn of the White House after meeting with the president of the United States, saying that he'll meet with whatever Republicans want to meet with him, Mitch McConnell, whoever, but they're bringing the heat this summer and there's nothing we can do about it. Does he get charged with inciting riot? You then, my favorite, is Benjamin Crum, a lawyer like me, standing out in front of the courthouse saying that if we don't get the verdict we want, that what happened last year in the cities in America will look like child's play, threatening violence and death and destruction. And does he lose his law license? Does he go to jail? No. He gets a $27 million gift from the city of Minneapolis for the life of a career criminal drug addict. And what does Benjamin Crump get? He gets probably half of that in his pocket.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Mark, for joining us tonight. If you want to support him, go to his website, McCloskeyForSenate.com. Or if you are a Missouri resident, make sure that you vote for him. Mark, why should the people of Missouri vote for you for Senate briefly before we wrap up?
Well, I've been a lifelong anti-communist. I've been a lifelong supporter of our country. And I got to tell you, the difference between what I hope to do as a senator and what the United States government is doing now, you don't have to look very far back in our history to see that everybody, regardless of their color and their national origin, all pulled in the same direction, all worked together. The United States used to be unique in the world in that almost everybody in this country believed that tomorrow would be better than today and the future would be better than the past because we were all working together to make that so, all working together to lift all of us up and to create this country, which was the greatest country on the planet, the highest standard of living, and a level of luxury and wealth that the world had never seen before. But now what we have is a government that's trying to make us all pull against each other instead of pulling together. And that has to stop, because that just, the more discord there is, the more violence there is, the more fighting in the streets there is, the more division there is, the more the government hopes that the people will clamor for more government to save them. And the exact opposite is what needs to take place. We need to have less government and we need to save ourselves. I call this a post-political time in America. The government's not going to solve our problem. Each and every one of us has a duty to stand up and make a personal commitment to our freedom, a personal commitment to reestablishing our individual liberties, our God-given rights, and our constitutional protections, and just say we are not going to be sheep. We're going to be free Americans, and we're going to stand up for our freedoms, no matter what the powers of the mass media and the deep state and the swamp want to impose upon us.
Well, thank you so much, Mark, and what a privilege it's been tonight having this in-depth conversation with Mark McCloskey. It's been really nice to be able to sit down with him and hear him for an hour with an in-depth conversation. We really appreciate Mark's time and for coming on After Dark with Robin Andrew on America Out Loud. Thank you for joining us tonight on After Dark with Robin Andrew. Check us out on all the other shows over at AmericaOutLoud.com. We will see you guys next time, and remember to stand for something or you will fall for nothing.